What up, everybody? It's your boy, St. Cloud the Pilot, and this is Pilot Talk. This is the way of the universe. That is the way of the universe. This is the way of the universe. What up, everybody? It's your boy, Sammy St. Cloud, and it is that time. Episode 2 of Pilot Talk is here. I'm so excited. Today, I have a very special guest on. He is a filmmaker, he is a writer, and he is also a rapper, my good friend Trey Hill. We actually met a couple years ago through a mutual friend. We realized that we both were on this journey of becoming master storytellers, and we both realized that we love hip-hop. So, you know, we had the chance of working on some music videos together. Trey actually directed a music video for We Are Lucid, me and Malia, and we also did some short films together. And you know what? This guy has such an infectious personality. He's such a joy to be around, and he has such a unique outlook on life, and I can't wait to share it with you guys. So please welcome my buddy, Trey Hill. Yeah. My friend,
what up, brother?
You doing good, man?
Never bad, my man. I can't complain, man. It's always good to talk to you.
Hell yeah, dude. I feel the same way. I mean, I feel like we always have good conversations, so to be able to use it, you know, to have them on this platform is very, you know, special to me. So I want to start by asking you, first off, congratulations on the, you know, the baby to come. That's exciting.
Thanks, my man. Yeah, man. She's 3 weeks away. So basically, crazy. It could happen any day, man. So yeah, it's fun stuff.
Are you excited?
Yeah, man. Yeah. Well, when I turn my focus and think about it, yeah. But definitely. You know, all of my mentors and everyone I respect and that has gone through it, they're all like, you know, everything will change and it'll all happen in a very organic way. So just embrace it, right?
Sure.
So
definitely.
I'm trying not to be anxious about it, you know, really, really excited about it.
For sure, man. So what have you been doing, like, you know, during the like quarantine and the social distancing and everything, just to like keep your mind right and just to, you know, now that you are you still going to school right now or?
So that definitely got complicated due to coronavirus, but it's still fine. You know, I'll just be in for a little bit longer, take my time. And this summer I can focus more on the family. But no, man, my days, it's honestly been a blessing in disguise because I just have a to-do list and I'm just checking them off now. I can just kind of laser in more and, you know, there's just a lot of writing and, you know, development and, you know, small boxes to check off of like budgeting and, you know, setting up, you know, the podcast that I got going on and,
awesome, hell yeah,
you know, all that good stuff, production plans and, you know, getting ready for the plan for when I do graduate. And,
definitely.
And then of course my wife keeps me running around, you know.
Right. So I know the feeling, man. I hear it.
Yeah, man.
So the first thing I want to talk to you actually about is like rapping. So like, when did you first realize that you like to rap?
Yeah, man. So the first time I realized that I liked to rap was probably, I would say, like around like 7th, 8th grade. I was always a writer in many different forms. I wrote, you know, little comics and journals and, you know, I wrote a book about imaginary dinosaurs, like, yeah, man. But you know, it didn't turn into music until the summer after I met my older brother, and he kind of changed me from like the bubblegum getting jiggy with it Puff Daddy stuff to like, you know, Wu-Tang and Nas and Mobb Deep and Outkast, and that it wasn't until like I really, or we would be breaking down lessons. He would be breaking down lessons with me, like Supreme Mathematics and 5% Nation. And, you know, when I actually started to listen to music for more than just, you know, dancing and stuff. And that when that was right when they had, I think it was like Ooh La La La, com where you could go on and get the lyrics, and we would I would print out the lyrics, you know, and I would just circle them and highlight them, and I don't even know what I was doing. I would love to find those notes, because I look back, I'm like, what was I doing? What did I see then? Like, right?
Yeah, for sure. That's
you know, cool. but yeah, just like I would just circle and write and scribble and highlight, and I think that's when I first started to write rhymes, and like I would listen to instrumentals, look for instrumentals to my favorite songs, you know, on that, what was it, like the line, the joint that was like horrible for your camera, I mean your computer, that was fire your computer.
Oh, LimeWire or whatever?
Yes, yeah, man. Like, and I didn't even have a computer, so I was like frying all my friends' computers, trying to download instrumentals and stuff, man, and that's, and I never, you know, at that point, I was in high school and middle school.
Right.
You know, I never really saw it as a career or anything. It was more art therapy at that point, like we were talking about before. But,
yeah, thanks. That's awesome. So that's crazy. Like, so how old were you at that point that you already kind of like, I don't know, were you aware that you were already kind of using like rap as like therapy?
I like to think I'm self-aware. I don't know. Sure. I think I did see it as a good hobby. I think I definitely saw it as therapeutic, man. Like, cause I, like I said, I always, you know, went to the pen, you know, in so many forms, but when I started writing rhymes, I think that I really started, that was when I really first started to articulate my thoughts and figuring out how to get them out and how they would sound to other people. Right.
Right.
You know, I definitely think that was, a big moment in that aspect, definitely.
Was there a certain song or like a certain artist that you think that like influenced you most at that point where you were like, you felt that in their music as well? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. It's like asking what my favorite movie is, right?
Right, I know.
You know, I'm going to condense it down to the time, to the era that you're referring to. Definitely. And when you're talking about when I first fell in love with hip hop again, you're talking about my older brother switching me from, you know, getting jiggy with it and like right. The shiny suits.
Right.
It was like I said, Wu-Tang, you know, and all the offshoots too, Killer Army and yes. Killer Priest, Sons of Man, yeah. All of that. I was in deep on all of that, but I would say that my personal journey. If you talk about artists, I'll have to boil it down to the least I could boil it down to would be at that point in my life is definitely Prodigy from Mobb Deep.
Yes, yes.
Andre 3000 from Outkast and the homie NAS. You know, and it's like in them, for me, I got a lot of different things with Prodigy, you know, that teenage angst, you know, that preteen angst,
right.
Where we're like, you know, we're boys and like we're angry at everything and we want to wear, right. You know, all baggy clothes and F everything and like on my mind is madness, like, you know, that's Prodigy to the umpteenth, right? And
right.
When you in those modes, like, you don't want to be trapped in those spaces, you know, but like he definitely. He was my sort of blues, you know, he was my kind of preteen blues, you know.
I love that analogy.
Yeah, man. And then I would definitely say with Andre 3000, like I always saw myself, even though my brother was getting me hip to Wu-Tang, like, you know, he definitely came from a rougher background than me, you know. And, you know, life definitely hadn't been the kindest to him as it was to me. So it was like, you know, I never really could feel like what Ghostface was talking about the way he could feel it, right?
Right.
You know, so it's almost like that imposter syndrome. But when it came to Andre 3K, like I didn't feel like I could be the hardest gangster. I didn't feel like I could be the coolest like Nas.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But right. I knew I could be the loudest and like the flyest and like just like the most outspoken and right. Be different and kind of be embraced by the things that make me different. And actually I didn't know that until I listened to Andre, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So So yeah. I like Andre really made me feel like I was cool. It was cool to be weird, you know?
Yeah, and, definitely.
And then the last one, of course, like is Nas, you know, like my son is gonna be named Nasir, you know.
I love
and, yeah, you know, and it's like on everything, and on everything for without sounding like, you know, absolute, you know, just worshiping him. Like I just feel like we just kind of carry the same type energy, and when I hear his lyrics of introspection, and the way he's able, I feel like. You know, when I think about the analogy of him and Jay-Z, what it's like Nas, he's kind of always had like this kind of born like attractiveness, you know, like the way he speaks, you know, he's very talented lyrically. His first album was a classic. He's a good looking guy, you know, like he's,
right.
you know, it's like, he's like, you know, he was always cool on the block. He was always definitely. Nas on the block. And Jay-Z, he's kind of like, he kept saying, I'm the best. And we were kind of like, nah.
Yeah.
And so we were like, all right, damn. Right. You know, and right. I'm only bringing out their analogy just to say that, what I recognize in Nas is just kind of like this kind of humble energy of just kind of, you know, introspection and just kind of figuring out what to do with this position that you feel like you are empowered to take, you know, and his way of articulating himself and articulating his thoughts and his perspective. I just really respect, and, you know, and I really see my, and again, it's to this day, you know, it gives me encouragement, and yeah, man, it's just the same energy, I feel like.
Definitely. And I feel like too, with Nas, it's like, you don't see a lot of artists, at least that have been out as long as has been like be able to constantly like push, you know, their pin and kind of like make you like realize that like, dudes like him are constantly like evolving as artists. You know what I'm saying? Like he never gave up on his art just because he was getting older, or just because he was, you know what I'm saying? Like even when he put out that last album, like the one with Cherry Wine and all that shit, it's just showed so much maturity. It's like, it almost makes you feel like, what would have Pac be like right now if he was putting out music, right? Like what type of like, what messages would he be talking about in the world? Like how would he look at current events and all that stuff too? So I feel like Nas is just one of the people that inspires me so much just to keep going. Like no matter how old you are, no matter what it is, it's like be about your art. And I feel like he always had a message in his shit. He just wasn't right. He wasn't just rapping because, you know, and I'm not saying anything against like Jay-Z, but he's even said in some of his songs, like, you know, like I was out here hustling and I was out here rapping because he was trying to make money. And I feel like it was very always clear in Nas's message that he was like an artist. Like he was like, looked at his, you know, Kanye looks at himself like, I am an artist. Like Nas is a great artist. Like there's an art to it when you see him rap, you know what I'm saying?
Right. And I think that him and Jigga's dichotomy, I think the reason why it is so powerful and it's such a great yin to a yang, because people, you know, I'm gonna talk about like a lot of folks that I rapped with in my years, or maybe just a handful.
Right.
But it was like, but it's like, you know, at that time, you know, early 20s, like that was like the 50 Cent, T.I., Kanye era, Hustler, you know, Rick right. Ross, get your money, Young Jeezy, get your money. Like I'm in this for the hustle. And I think at the same time that when I was entering the game and I was realizing that I was talented and that I had something that people wanted to listen to, especially performance-wise, more than recording artist-wise, I had a lot more experience as a performer, so it worked out a lot more for me that way. But it was just like, wow, oh man, there's something here. I love this. I want to do this as much as possible, and I want to get good at it, and I want to share it with people, and I want to figure out how to articulate this and get good at it so I can share it with people. And any success from this is a byproduct of that, is a byproduct of how good I did doing that, right? And that's the way I always saw that. But I think in hindsight, I think I recognized in a lot of other people that I was around where it was like, this is going to get me on, which is dope, which is all gravy. I'm not knocking it at all. But if you're like, this is how I'm gonna get on, then I just think that when you talk about like Nas being able to kind of always kind of be about the artist. I think his artistry, I think it's about being about your voice, being loyal with your voice. Because if you're loyal to your voice, then you can get better at your voice. You can be loyal to the audience that appreciates that voice, and you can kind of shape that world and kind of be a king in your own self, kind of, you know, in that endeavor. And, you know, and it doesn't matter how much money you make. It doesn't matter how much notoriety or acclaim you won. The second you spoke into the mic, you won, because you're doing what you love to do, right?
Right. So. Dude, yeah, I love that. And, you know, it's funny that you even mentioned it earlier. You're like, at first it was like more of like an art therapy to me. And I love that because, you know, me and you have talked about that a lot. I feel like there's like some connection in that to like a lot of like at the root of hip hop, like when it was first started, that was a lot, like you can just hear it in a lot of the songs, like that it was therapy for them, and them talking about their stories and like what they have been through. And at the time where there wasn't a big outlet or a place for African Americans or other minorities to have a voice, hip hop was that place where they could kind of share it and kind of talk about their struggles or what they're like faced, you know, kind of what they're going through. So I feel like that's why I love when you like say this shit about art therapy. Because for me, when I first started like really rapping, I feel like it was like that for you too, or same as you. It was like I started writing like lyrics and poetry and shit, and I knew that I liked, you know, I knew that I liked to rap, and I wanted to, like, I feel like at the, like it was like half and half. It was like I wanted to like the to like to be like Nas or to be like all these other guys, and I wanted to be cool and be on stage and rock the mic and all that other shit. But I feel like really at the root of it, like what it was doing for my life at such a young age, it was giving me like, you know, a way to like, I don't know, work through some of the shit that I was probably not working through in my life at the time, you know, in a healthy way. But when I could sit down right. and write it out, you know, it changed my whole perspective on like using that art, you know, to self-soothe or whatever you want to say, you know what I'm saying?
Definitely, man. Definitely. I think that's the best thing that art can do, man, for yourself and for others. You know, it's my wife is a clinician, and, you know, and I joke around that, like, you know, she gets to go down and do the dirty work, you know, and actually, touch people on a personal level while I get to play up in the clouds all day, right, and play in Fantasyland. But, you know, I do honestly see, like, you know, almost like the yogi, like being in a meditative state, you know, to bring peace. It's almost like that, where it's like, you know, if I can kind of reach that place where I, as an artist, that I can, you know, communicate in an eloquent way what I'm trying to do, whether it be a film or a song,
right,
or, you know, whatever piece of writing, that it puts me in a positive place, and the people that are, you know, viewing it or, you know, experiencing it. And I think that's the best thing that, you know, any of us can, you know, hope to get as an artist, definitely.
Definitely. So there's this teacher in Atlanta named Bettina Love, and she talks about, like, basically, like, hip-hop being connected to, like, African Americans, like, ancestral, like, DNA. Like, it's, like, in our...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about, so what do you feel about those people that we were talking about, like, Nas? Do you hear that, and, like, as it, like, being a way that we have, like, kind of, like, stayed connected to our ancestors and kind of could stay connected to, like, you know, how our art was supposed to be used at, you know, at the root of actually what it is, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. You know, man, you know, this is our stuff, man. This is what we geek out about with our graphic novels that we work on, and
oh, yeah.
all the folklore behind what we do as artists. I think that us as, you know, as Black Americans, you know, especially when you talk about the Afrofuturism and stuff, it's like we do a lot of, in our art, we do a lot of history correcting. We do a lot of searching for power, for our history, for our lineage. We do a lot of making it up, you know, for better or worse.
Yeah.
I think that it's really dope that you know, rap, I think the founding fathers, you know, when you talk about the original five elements, you know, of breakboy dancing, graffiti, MCing, DJing. Oh, I'm forgetting one. Graffiti,
dancing,
rapping, MCing.
Or
damn. There's another one. It'll come up, man. Oh, man, the hip hop boys are going to get us for that one. But no.
Oh, shit. What are we, Mel, what are we missing? DJ, breakdancing, like dancing, rap, graffiti.
MC. But oh, you said rap. You said rap.
Yeah.
It's all good. We'll figure it out, man. But in any event, you know, the original elements, they're very similar to like Avatar, you know, like that last Airbender, right? When you talk about like, you know, air, water, fire, ground, earth, you know, all that jazz. And I think that when we, as in the Latino Americans like you were talking about, I think that, you know, as people of color, I'm very much a vibrationalist, and I definitely think that we all are just living in different frequencies, you know, whether that, and it's much due to many, many different elements as far as who we are, where we're from, our nurturement, our nature, what we do, what we believe in, that, you know, that those are like two big things, right? Like our actions and what we choose to put our attention to, right? It has everything to do with the vibration that you're working on, right?
Right.
The words that come out of your mouth, right? Like curse words, like they're literally curse words, right? You know, like what are you going to put on? What is the energy that you're putting out to people and all that stuff, right? So I think that, you know, violins, you know, like the light strings put you in this place, right? But doom, 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 that puts you to a whole other place, right? You know, and I think that hip hop is just in that kind of free kind of sort of digital, non-linear way of kind of mixing up and using all of those energies in a very alchemical way that's very ancient.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff we can get into our real deep in our bag and talk about, you know, African Bambaataa coming from another planet, you know, and
Sun Ra.
Sun Ra, the star Orion. We can really get deep into it, but more than anything, you know, to sum it all up, I think that the griot, the ancient African griot, would prove to you that we've always been a very vibratorial, we didn't write down, we spoke the word. The word, you know, the game's to be sold, not to be told, right? You know, it's like we didn't write it down to give to others or to hoard or to use its power. We exchanged it, you know, and in a very vibratorial way that was reciprocated, you know, by the listener and the speaker, and it was a rhythmic way, right? Like what somebody might call like Ebonics and uneducated, we know how to talk through and around the words and the letters and the spaces in between them, and that's why we can, when we speak, we're talking with our hands. And then I'm up here with you, bro. But then guess what? You know, like we can, you know, I feel like that's what storytelling is in its essence. And I think that just hip hop is just such a potent way, especially coming from where we're from. It's such a potent example of what our ancestors kind of, you know, the same frequency that they were on. We're just doing it. We just upgraded it. We're just taking it to another level, man. And we've been running it. It's been running culture, you know?
Definitely, 100%. So when you say storytelling, let me ask you a question. So I know you went from rapping and writing first, and then you kind of went into film after that. Or did the comic book actually come before the film, or did that, the comic book writing and the filmmaking all kind of like happen simultaneously?
Sure. Fix it in post. No. So yeah, man. Specifically on the New Travels of Black Dot that you're talking about, I started writing that back in 2009. Now, of course, I did all sorts of crazy stuff when I was a kid. I remember Vacuum Mater versus Dustzilla when I was like 6 years old.
Right? Mine was Adventures of Flim and Earl. I remember that. Adventures of
Flim and Earl. Yeah. Really throwing up.
It was about some country ass, like, I don't know where I was going with, but it's basically, I was on some like trying to raise awareness about like I guess it would be like racism. It was like reverse. It was like almost like the Boondocks kind of, but it was about white guys that were like super country and kind of like racist and shit. I don't know like where I was going with it, but yeah.
Dude. That sounds like it needs to get greenlit ASAP. For lemon, Earl are two different synonyms for throwing up. So maybe you were dealing with some sort of sickness.
Damn, that's crazy. I didn't even think about that. That's hilarious. One day you'll do that. Well, that'll be one of our future projects.
I want it, man.
But yeah, I would love to hear about that. Like, so yeah, talk more about
rap that. hip hop and making movies between being a rap artist and being a film director.
So just like your path, just like your transition from storytelling from one perspective with like the rapping and writing, right? And then going into like the filmmaking. And I was asking you at the time, like, cause I didn't know, cause you know, for everybody that's like going to, you know, watch this, Trey has also, you know, written a comic book as well. Did the idea for the comic book and you, that process come before you start, went to SCAD and started taking filmmaking serious?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. Yes, it did. I started working on Black Dot. Like, there are people on the set. I remember being on the set of Loving when we were filming in Virginia, and I was showing them when my illustrators were sending me the first character Bible that we were doing. I'm like, oh, look at this. I'm like showing Joel Edgerton and Ruth Negga. I'm like, look at this. They're like, oh, snap. Yeah, man. And I remember, you know, even before that, when we were drawing them and showing them pictures, you know, like it's sketches to other people. So, yeah, man, I have been at it for a while, just, you know, writing concepts. Originally, it was a screenplay that I wrote when I was working at Geico.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I was in homeowners insurance. And that was like my getaway, is that I would just constantly work on this screenplay that I wanted to kind of establish this whole universe. You know, and that was even before Marvel started doing it. You know, that was back in like 2009.
Right.
And like, you know, even though they were kind of already starting, but like.
But you know, already were like birthing that idea of like trying to build this universe around this, like, you know, certain character that you've already,
Right. And I mean, because we grew up on comics, and that was kind of the way I had always saw it anyway. I was just like, why write like a small story that when you can just expound upon it in so many different ways you can write. I always kind of wrote, like I was kind of, I'm kind of a world builder where I was like, I love to build this world and then just sit and watch the people interact. And then as a writer, I kind of just write down that amount of time that I was watching whatever character, right?
Right.
So you know, I didn't decide. I felt like filmmaking found me. I could say that the first thing that really encouraged me to go to film school when I was like 23 years old, somewhere around there, that was just, again, I was working like two jobs. I was at Geico and at Walmart and working, doing like a pyramid scheme, you know, like, so it was like, you know, I just was looking for more, looking to create and stuff. And then I went to a walk-in, I lost the vernacular right now, to the Art Institute of Washington. And the recruiter there, she was just being super sweet to me and just was just like, you know, I got a feeling this is for you. And maybe she says that to everybody, right? But it worked. So in any event.
Right, it was meant for you at that time. Yeah.
Exactly, man. So, you know, and I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I had nephews and nieces. They were always talking about being on TV and we would always be having fun. And at the time I was beginnings of starting to want to record, you know, with being around in the DC area and kind of seeing local artists and starting to get a little courage to want to do it myself, but I didn't really know how to go about it, you know?
Right.
I didn't really know about, you know, the whole process of open mics and all that stuff. So anyway, that's me deciding to go to the Art Institute of Washington and deciding specifically to go into film was based on those two things, based on like that visit, you know, playing around with my nephews and nieces and wanting to rap. And then it all blossomed, you know, once I picked up the camera and you know, and started understanding screenplay writing and fell in love from there.
So when you did all those music videos, that you've shown me some music videos from the past that you did of yourself, right? That you shot your own music videos. Was that before or after you had went to the Art Institute of Washington, right?
That was during.
That was during. That's awesome. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, that was during. Yeah, because, you know, I finally had the sustenance to do it. And actually, the director of that was one of the stand-ins, Kevin Spacey's stand-in on House of Cards. He did that. And so actually that music video was after I graduated. And that was the only music video I did that exists of myself. But I did do music videos and promos for other people. And that started.
We're lucid.
Ha ha, yeah, man. It's coming. It's almost done baking.
That's a shameless plug.
yeah, man. But as far as the intersection between hip hop and movies go, I'm gonna rap until I'm 100, or I'm gonna do music until I'm 100, man. Like I love it. I haven't felt compelled to write music almost like over a year, honestly. But I still get on the stage in many different capacities, and me, like, you got to really respect this film game, you know, like this, like, especially if you call yourself wanting to be a director,
right?
You really got to fall back and really master this game, because it'll take three lifetimes to understand it all, right? And plus, so I've really been spending time on figuring out what my voice is as a filmmaker. And I just think where those both correlate and where they're both very much parallel, being a rap artist and being a film director, they can seem very far off in a lot of ways. But what's that Venn diagram? Like that little part? Yeah, that where it's the same is that people respond to passionate storytelling.
Right.
You know? It's like that's the name of the game. It's like that same energy that Busta Rhymes comes in and that gives us that energy, you know, that same energy is the same wet feeling that a producer wants to feel when they look at your lookbook, when they listen to your pitch. It's the same thing that a line producer wants to see when they're reading your budget. And it's the same feeling that you want your actors to get when they read the script. It's the same energy that you want to have with the DP when you guys are talking up the shot list and the production design. That I got to be the number one cheerleader for my story. The story has to be interesting. It actually has to be good, right? And that's very subjective. So you could say it needs an audience. You have to find an audience. And that doesn't happen without good old-fashioned discipline in work, you know? Like, put in that work, build your audience, find your voice, and like do it, and like create a discipline to master the craft and respect the film gods, you know, so that they can pay you back, man. And I just think that that's so much in alignment with what I feel like what it was to be a hip hop artist, because you can be a real good lyricist. And you can break down the Socrates philosophies, but if the crowd ain't feeling it, right, then nobody's feeling it. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? And why are you doing it, right? Yeah. And it's the same exact thing for film, where it's like you're putting so many people through so many things, and you're asking people to sit down and watch your stuff, and it's like, man, you really got to be humble and be well-rounded. In pop, you know, it's got to pop. It's got to be story. It's got to be a good story. And that comes again, being passionate about it. You'll get everybody around you, that you get an audience, and you'll get the people around you to help you execute it. If you're passionate about it and you're disciplined, and it's good, you know.
So, do you feel like when you're starting out with like rap and like all that stuff, everything that you know now, do you feel like that had a direct like, I know, positive effect on like your, like what everything that you're doing with film right now, and like has it influenced any way how you shoot your films or how you go about writing some of your scripts that you've done?
Yeah, everything's probably a gift and a curse. You know, definitely my past influenced everything that I do as an artist in general. I think that the way I write, again, it's very world building based. So, and I love sci-fi. I'm definitely an existentialist, you know, transhumanist that is constantly, you know, like thinking super meta, you know, and so I think that a lot of my stories are dealing with altering reality or kind of a second or third dimensional way of writing where it's like not linear. I don't necessarily write in terms of beginning to end, which is cool. And you just have to be more disciplined and be a lot more clear about the story, because otherwise you'll just confuse people and people don't like that, right? But I think that I definitely believe in, you know, like, you know, the woke conscious movement has got a new, taste to it now, to say the least. But I do, but in any event, I just want to, whatever you want to call it, I just don't want to do anything for no reason. I want to give people a good feeling. I really appreciate, I'm a dreamer. You know, I want to shoot for, you know, the best and live there. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want people to hope. I don't want people to like believe in themselves. You know, and to be silly and to be their the unique thing about them that and to love that. You know, that the world might scrutinize you for, you know, whether it be, being conscious as a black American of our history, and that we're not victims anymore, and that we can, it's a choice away, whether it's, you know, being more conscious of, you know, the LGBTQ or women's rights. Okay. Or, you know, just all the hippie stuff, man. All the Rasta hippie stuff of just loving everybody, man. Like, you know, and I think that I'm constantly trying to find a story, like, as a conduit to get that message across. You know, whether that was when I was rapping or what I'm doing now, I kind of always am trying to figure out how to get that message out.
Definitely. So where did the, like, because you talked about Afrofuturism earlier, and then, you know, you talked about your love, like, you know, into science fiction. That's both something that we both share, that, you know, passion for science fiction. Like, what is, like, for some people that are listening that might not know, like, what is Afrofuturism, and, like, what does that mean to you? And, like, where did the inspiration come for your short films that you have out or that you're producing right now that are kind of, like, geared towards science fiction? Where did that all come from for you?
Right. Man, I gotta say that I came to Afro futurism a bit late with when Sam Jackson was Afro Samurai.
I love that. I was just so fire.
That was so cold. That joke was so cold, man. I love that joke, man. I fell in love then, man. But I think that Afro futurism definitely culminated in the big Black Panther boom, you know. I think that's a really good way of addressing it. And I think that what Afrofuturism is at the core is this sort of a mindset, again, of a sort of a reclamation of our history and kind of self-correcting what, trying to justify what the slave trade did, man.
Right, exactly.
Like, what the hell? We can't escape that. Can we just talk about it and address it so we can just move the F on, right? Every time I feel myself about to bring up slavery, I'm like, why are we still here? You know, I'm like, but you have to address it. I'm not gonna act like it's not there, son. Like we shouldn't.
Right.
So we can move on. Like, we're a traumatized people. Right. You know? And we have to identify ourselves with dope shit. We have to identify ourselves with conquering what happened to us and surviving through it. and right. what happened before, you know, from right. Babylon to Timbuktu, right. understanding yeah, yeah. what happened, you know, before white supremacy, when we, before we addressed each other as, you know, cities and states and countries, and we're addressing each other as tribes and people right. And spiritual belief systems. And, right. and it's like, if we, I think the Afrofuturism is where we can, man, it was where it's almost where reality and imagination kind of blur. It's this, and it's also where this sort of celebration and a funeral at the same time, where it's right. like we're like it's. I get this crazy mix of emotions because I love it so much, but right. then it's so disheartening too to know that it's not real.
Right.
You right. know, and to know that there is no Wakanda, and to know that we did not figure out what to do.
Right, and there's
white
still
supremacy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that's what Afrofuturism is. You know, it's us blending what we learn from the YouTube clips like that. It's what we learn from our history, is what us have chosen to kind of dig and figure out where we're from. You know, whether we'll ever be able to find our tribe or not, you know, this nomadic sort of being that we are in as Black Americans. It's us trying to navigate that in the form of fantasy, in the form of these nations that are organically and cyclically are respecting the ecosystem, but also technologically enhanced due to no perversion of industrialism or utilitarianism, right. or honestly fear of not having, because it's ran by a people of faith. It's ran by a people of love, and that are wanting to reciprocate that energy without fear of repercussion.
Definitely. So with all that being said, do you feel like, you know, now that you're in the film industry, you know, do you feel like, I don't know, I feel like there's like, it's really awesome when I turn on the TV and I see all these shows like Blackish and Mixedish and Grown, or in Black as Fuck, and like Fresh Off the Boat and all these different shows where there's like minorities like leading, you know what I'm saying? And it's like not even only just the minorities or the cast members, but they're writing the films, they're directing the films now, they're producing the films. With all that being said though, do you still feel like that there's some like adversity or still some obstacles for like Black filmmakers that they still are faced with, you know, now today?
Yeah, man. I mean, we're winning. I'm going to preface this with saying that we should always be wanting to progress. There should never be a mountain left unclimbed. Right. And that is not to bring down people that are still dealing with stuff, and it's not to align battles in the past with what we're dealing with now. But I mean, it is the democratization of art in general has kind of brought us to a place where, you know, anybody can do it. Everybody's a filmmaker. Honestly, you know, I've always believed, and my chorus teacher told me a long time ago, like when I was like, I can't sing, because I was singing like 3-4 octaves lower than everybody. And she was right. just like, no, you just have to find your voice. You're trying to sing like everybody else, and you have a lower voice, so you have to sing like this, right?
Right.
So it's like, I think just like she told me, like everybody has a voice, you just have to find it, you know, your singing voice. I believe that everybody's a filmmaker. If you own a phone, you're a filmmaker. If you have an Instagram, if you've shared a film, if you've shared, you know, a piece of like, you know, a movie file with right. like 24 frames per second, then guess what? You're a filmmaker, right?
Right.
So I think that to boil it down, the Tyler Perrys, the Ryan Cooglers, you know, the Issa Rays, you know, I'm talking about current people, you know, and that's not even talking about, you know, John Singleton and Spike right. Lee. I can get real old school on you and right. go, you know, like Robert Townsend, all the way to Oscar Michaud, my dog. Like
Sidney Poitier, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. And you know, he's an actor, right? Yeah. But it's like, you know, we have to tell stories, so we're going to do it, and we're always going to do it on a high level, and it's awesome, and we're always going to have an audience, so we just have to, you know, like the Lupe song, if you are what you say you are, you have no fear, because, you know, there's always people that want real music, and they want real art, and they want, and I just think that it's just awesome when you can position yourself. Like you gotta, it's hard, not because we're Black, because you wanna be a freaking filmmaker, bro. You know what I'm saying? Because you wanna be a rap artist, because you wanna call yourself making money for doing something that people do in the shower. You feel me? But you wanna call yourself making money for it. You feel me?
Right.
So just understand it. Like, you gotta grind for that, man. Right. It's like you should just, that is a prerequisite. Like, of, I gotta be busting my tail. You know, if you're calling yourself wanting to do something on such a high functional level, and I just think that there are racial barriers. There are also a lot of other barriers that, when you want to talk about this frequency, I think that, like, if the bandwidth to become a successful Black American was like this in the 60s, like all the rest of this was like everyone else, maybe it's like this now. I don't know. Right?
In fact, yeah, I feel
maybe,
you. Yeah.
Maybe the bandwidth is like right here, and like, you, like, son, give me that. I can do that.
Exactly.
Give me that, bro.
Hell yeah.
I can do something in that. Because my grandfather didn't have that. My father didn't have that. Yes. My big brother didn't have that. So I'm gonna make it do what it do with this, right? And I'm gonna enjoy it. So I mean, I don't know. I know I'm always talking in circles, but hell yeah, Ryan Coogler, Danny Glover, you know what I'm saying? Hell yeah, Issa, hell yeah. I mean, like, I'm not saying enough names, man. Like, and I know Ava DuVernay. I know they busted their tail, man. I know there's stories that I don't know, man, because there's stories that they don't know. There's stories that y'all don't know.
Right.
There's nights of me cleaning up shit, you know, where I know that I might want to shoot. And we're gonna be rehearsing there in the morning.
Right.
I gotta go, so I go there 3 o'clock in the morning to clean up the shit. Like, right. There's stories that of like problems that have nothing to deal with prejudice. You know, it's just hard to do in general. Now, you know, tie a hand behind your back. You know, if you want to talk about, you know, being Black in a certain era. But is it the same equivalent to that right now? I don't think so. Do I still think there's some people shucking and jiving out there, you know, that they got to do that to make their money? Yeah. And sure. I'm not knocking them for it, but I mean, that's the system. That's the way it is. And I'm sure it's hard for other people in other ways, right? Like, you know, now they don't want to hear white guy stories, right? White straight guy stories, right? Now you're a straight white guy, now they can talk about their struggle now, right?
I mean, even Jordan Peele set up. Even Jordan Peele was like, you know, I try not to book a white guy as my lead, because we've heard that story. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, and I'm the same way.
Yeah,
and I'm the same way. And it's like, my leads have been. Like, my last lead was a woman. The lead before that was an Asian man. The lead before that was a Black man. And and maybe this is probably an indictment on my storytelling, but it's like, if those were white guys, that story would have already been told before. So, you know what I'm saying?
I feel you.
So, I don't know. At the end of the day, I think that it's there. And maybe I've experienced stuff. And I have actually experienced prejudice, and, you know, I've dealt with a lot of BS, you know, based on racism before. I'm sure I'll deal with it in the past, but it'll never be on my tombstone as like what brought me down. It'll never be. I'll never allow such a dogmatic position conquer me. I'm on top of a base of bedrock. If you're on that, I mean, it's not even by my, you know, in my personal beliefs, you know, that'll take care of itself.
Facts, dude. Well, you know what? You just hit me with something. I got one last question before we go, but I wanted to you just brought something into my mind. Me, you, Mel, and Robin are gonna have to talk about interracial relationships one day.
Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah, man.
Good. Especially, you know, and then Robin, you know, her background and everything, so she could talk about it from so many other, you know, points too, you know. So I feel like that'd be cool.
That'd be great, man.
Yeah, hell yeah. My last thing I gotta ask you is that you kind of already touched on it, but is there any, like, you know, if there's like an aspiring filmmaker or writer or rapper out there maybe watching this, any, you know, advice you could give them to, if they're not feeling motivated right now or inspired to create?
I'm gonna sound like a Saturday morning cartoon. Like, you can do anything when you put your mind to it. Just be disciplined and put your energy towards it. Learn yourself, learn the craft. Don't do it for money. And I'm saying that in every way. Like be uncomfortable on whatever level that you're on. You know, like, we all got to survive, but also be comfortable in just doing your craft. Like, really, really. And if you're not, then it's okay. Find something else to do, you know, and don't beat yourself up about it. Find your story, you know, find your voice and have fun with it, man.
Done. Yeah, Trey, I love it. Is there any upcoming projects that are any of your short films out where anybody could see them yet? Like, or is there any, can you tell everybody where they could go see some of your work if there is?
Yeah. You could go to my website, treyhill.com. It's T-R-E-I-H-I-L-L. That you can go on there, and I have a couple of videos on there. Federation Temple, the short film I did a couple years ago, is on there. We did our festival run last summer, so that's finally up on there. I am in post-production for a film I'm super excited about called Child Indigo that you guys helped out on. And basically, we're just waiting for this this Rona. We waiting on the Rona, player. Rona. I don't know what to do, man. I'm like, who's gonna want to be at anybody's theater anytime soon, bro?
Dude, I just saw somebody put the coming out on Friday. I'm like, wait, like,
why? So, I mean, I know there's a lot of streaming platforms, but I'm like, man, like, it's such a, like, I'm glad that I could focus on being a dad, and that's really what I'm focusing on. Like, because it's like, I'm like, man, like, that baby, you know, like, I was really excited to show that to the world this spring, man, and it's like, I don't even know what festivals or doing what or when or.
Hey, dude, that just means it's everything's in divine timing, my brother. So that just means that it's all gonna work out right when it's supposed to. I have no worries about that for you, man, dude. You,
I appreciate it, man.
I'm so glad that we got to have this conversation. You inspire me, brother. Like, you know, we're gonna do this again, you know, sometime soon. Tell everybody where they can find you on social media or on Instagram, man. Facebook, all that stuff.
Yeah, man. You can. Again, Trey Hill, T-R-E-I Hill, H-I-L-L. That's my Facebook, my Instagram. You can go to my website too. And Sammy, I will sign off without telling you just how dope you are. Like, yeah. I love your energy. You are always seeking to, you want to talk about that journey of knowing yourself. I feel like you master it so eloquently, man. Like, you're a dancer. Your dance is eloquent in life, my man. You're such a loving person, and you're a powerful person. Your energy is powerful and beautiful. And thank you, man. Thanks for letting the brother hang.
Again, dude. Hey, we're for sure gonna do this. Like, I'm gonna watch all this footage back and everything, because I feel like we had a lot of good shit there. But I'll send it to you. But, you know, let's just plan that we'll probably do this again. But if not, you know, we got it, you know, for sure.
Whatever, man. I'm here for you, homie.
Appreciate you so much, brother.
Hey, go, man.
Hi, all right?
I got you. Tell Mel I said peace out, and keep you together over there.
Hell yeah, brother.
I'm messing with you, bro. Be easy, all right?
No, you too, brother. Thank you.
All right.